Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, March 24th. It sure feels like summer outside.
Yeah, huh? It does.
We have what they call Santa Ana winds, which are hot winds that come from the east, and they create a lot of dryness here.
Yes.
And a lot of winds.
Do you have allergies?
Not really, no. I just... I do get a little nasally, though, when it's dry outside.
Yeah.
You know, I can't, as much as I blow my nose, I don't know, it doesn't go 100%. So, I know the problems we have in our lives, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great now that I have my coffee. Uh-huh. I didn't sleep so well last night. I woke up at like 2 in the morning.
You're kidding?
No, and then I couldn't fall back asleep till like 5 in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what did you do in those 3 hours? Did you eat, watch TV?
No, I like read some stuff. Uh-huh. I tried to sleep. Just
really? So you just were like awake?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What time did you go to bed? 11?
Like 11:30.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't get much sleep. So you definitely need your coffee.
Right. That's why the biggest size ever.
Yeah.
I got the venti.
Yeah, coffee does help.
Yeah.
I know.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great, keeping busy, but, you know, otherwise I'm fine. And so we're going to be, like, relaunching our video, well, officially launching it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're busy moving and everything, but as you can see, it's a little messy here. But yeah, that's keeping me busy, a lot of things on my mind, but, you know, it's a good thing, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
It's better than being bored and not knowing what the hell to do.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, they say that people that are unemployed are really, like, depressed, stressed out, you know, insecure.
Well, they don't have a purpose every day.
Right.
I mean, whether or not you, like, make your job or your career or your purpose in life, you know, it just at least gives you something to do and feel like you accomplished something and check things off lists. And
yeah, you know, I mean, people
contribute.
Need to be able to do things,
right.
You know? And I think if you, you know, I don't know, man, it's what we were talking about.
Sounds like you didn't get sleep last night. We were talking about people that are unemployed,
I know.
Feeling
I know.
Insecure.
And that's the thing. You have a reason to get up in the morning. You know,
right.
That's the important thing, I think.
I just never understand people that'll call me or text me and be like, what are you doing today? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's a Monday.
Yeah.
Or like today, Tuesday, you know, like... What do you mean? What am I doing? I'm trying to make a living.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Are these like your actor friends and stuff?
Well, I think the thing is people, the careers we have here and the jobs we have here and the like structure we have here is so different from anywhere else because it's just not that kind. It's not a 9-to-6 kind of place or 9-to-5 kind of place. Yes, some people have those kinds of jobs, but then those jobs even are like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Right.
You know, they're not. It just doesn't have like the 8-hour workday rule anymore over here.
That's true.
So
that's very true. And a lot of people like they don't work regularly.
No.
Yeah.
It's not regular hours. Most people work for themselves or like they can work from home or they work like odd jobs or are bartenders or whatever they are. You know.
Right.
It's just not the typical structure. So here, when somebody says, like, what are you doing today? It makes sense. It's just kind of, like, frustrating.
Yeah.
Because it's also like, well, what are you doing actually today?
Obviously not a lot if they ask you.
Right. I'm like, it's not a weekend. It's not a vacation.
Yeah.
Assume I'm trying to work at something today.
Make a living.
Right. I'm doing some sort of work.
There you go. You know, I mean, a lot of people are just lazy, I think. You can't just come to town, say I'm an actor, and not do anything, you know. Have a job to sustain your life, and be an actor. Nobody's telling you not to.
I mean, I just think that, like, things aren't going to happen for you unless you make them happen. I, like, will always think like that. I don't know how people don't think like that, but
right. For
me, if I have nothing to do during the day, I create things to do because I will have to get ahead in some way. So if you build it, they will come. Like I would find a million things to do that day to like get work toward my goal.
Yeah, increase your opportunity, right. Maybe, you know, be there at the right time, in the right place.
And I think people are either self-motivated or they're not.
Right.
And so I can't relate to people that are not.
Right. You have to be a self-starter to be like that.
Right.
You really do. Yeah, so, yeah, this town is weird with jobs and everything, but there's a lot of people that just, I find they don't work. I don't know how they survive, but they do somehow, mm-hmm. You know. And we meet a lot of people in entertainment here at the radio station, so I know several people that don't work. I don't know how they survive, but...
I mean, even people that do work and have, like, a job. To me, just having a job that you do is, like... Okay, that's fine, but what else?
Right.
Like, do more. You know, there's always more you can be doing for yourself. Like, I'm sure there's passions and hobbies and businesses you want to start. Like, start them.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, but it's a good thing because you already have formed a positive opinion about it, you know. So, obviously, this is going to filter out all the lazy guys that you run into.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why it makes dating hard.
Yeah.
Because I just can't deal with people that, like, are complacent with, like, struggling. I don't really get that. We all struggle. But, like, it's how you persevere. I did quit Tinder. I will tell you that.
Really?
And
officially?
I quit Tinder and I joined Hinge. I've moved on.
Now, why would you quit Tinder? I mean, you just felt it was like a dead end or something?
Because it's just like, you know, quantity over quality.
Right.
And I... realize that I don't want to meet people that I don't have a mutual friend with. Mm. And you have to sift through a lot of people to find the people you have mutual friends with. So Hinge is only people you have mutual friends with. While it gives you less options, it's still only people that you at least know one person in common with.
Oh, wow. So it goes based on what, Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I think already just like filters out people. And like, I don't want to be catfished and, you know, meet somebody that isn't who they say they are. Because with Instagram, you don't have to sign up with... I guess you do sign up with Facebook, but like you can just be whoever, like you could pretend to be somebody. And if you don't have a mutual friend with me, that means that like no one else can verify you are who you say you are.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You know, I mean, that's, I think that's a good way to be careful, you know, with all the things that are happening, Craigslist, you know, people get killed and stuff.
Yeah.
It's very scary, you know, but yeah, one thing I noticed about Tinder, though, is almost every woman says no hookups, you know? And I'm like, come on, man. You're looking for somebody serious on Tinder, you know?
Well, some people find relationships on there.
Yeah.
They do. I mean, I know plenty of people that have.
Yeah. I know. I've got several women that gave me even phone numbers. I haven't even gotten around to it.
Still?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I should pay more attention to it. And,
well, I think that our relationship experts would say then it's not a priority.
Yeah, that's true.
Which makes sense. Which why, for me, Hinge makes more sense because I'm like, it's not a million people you're interacting with that overwhelms me. It's like once in a blue moon you might find somebody you like on there. And to me, that's more organic, like when you go out on the town and you might meet somebody organically.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like not just hundreds of people you have to have conversation, meaningless conversations with and like... I don't know. I just feel better about Hinge.
I know. All that small talk is killing me.
It's annoying. It feels like a job.
It does. It does.
And I guess they would say, like, well, if you want to find your soulmate, you should make it a job or, like, a priority. But, like,
right.
I don't want it to feel, like, daunting. I want it to be exciting.
I know. Yeah, well, you know. They're saying that in Asia, I was going to bring this up, they have... like, their dating apps are different, you know. So they're saying that over there, you know, really the hookups are not common. And those are... So the apps are more like to create a friendly, safe community for users, you know. That because, I mean, we've discussed Asian cultures here before. And, you know, the things that I learned about Asian cultures is that they're more in groups, you know. They don't really stand out
right. That
much. So that's how these apps accommodate them. It's like you can get a wingman or something to go with you, you know. No adultery allowed. They don't allow married men on the app.
That's amazing.
What about married women?
Well, that's true. What about them?
Yeah, right? But so they just assume that women don't cheat. Married women don't cheat.
Well, that's silly.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think assumptions should be made like that. But at least they're, it sounds like they're going in the right direction.
Yeah.
Because it's incredible to me, too, like how many times I hear on Tinder, a single girlfriend of mine sees one of our friend's boyfriends on there. And we're like, well, that, should we tell her? Is it our responsibility? What do we do?
I know. I've seen something like that, too. And I thought, it's not my place to say anything, you know, so I'll just keep it.
I think it depends on the relationship.
Yeah.
And it also, yeah, I just, I don't know.
Well, it depends, yeah. It depends, but I mean, like, I mean, are you talking like if you saw somebody cheat, like on a dating site who's married and you know them?
Well, no, my friend's boyfriends.
The boyfriends?
Yeah, if they're on there.
Right.
They shouldn't be on a dating site.
Right, but maybe it's not your decision.
I mean, well, no, I well...
Because look what might happen. Let me tell you what might happen is you're driving a wedge between them, and then... If they break up, you might feel responsible for it.
I would feel fine with that.
Yeah?
I have no issues with that. Because, first of all, if somebody's on a dating site and they're in a relationship and the other person doesn't know, they should know. Mm. They have the right to know. And if you're their friend, I think you have the responsibility. However, if they have a crappy relationship and they keep breaking up and getting back together and, like, it's a mess as is, I wouldn't... It's like, cut your losses. They don't even care. Why should you care?
Right. Now, what if it's not a very close friend? Would you do it then?
No.
Okay.
No, that's not my responsibility. She has her own close friends.
Right. Hmm. I guess that's a pretty controversial thing, I think.
Probably.
Because, yeah. Because I guess people would feel differently. I mean, I would be like probably dying to tell them. But I don't think I would, you know. Let them figure it out themselves. I don't want to be the reason for the breakup and stuff. But you know what? On the other hand, you're right. Because if somebody's stupid enough to put their picture in a profile on a dating site while they're in a relationship, maybe they deserve this.
It's true. I mean, at the same time, like, I see friends on there, guy friends, and, like, I'll screenshot their profile and send it to them and be like, spotted.
Yeah.
Or I'll send it, we'll, like, group chat a bunch of our girlfriends and be like, just saw this guy on here, and, like, we'll read his profile and, like, make fun of him, because it's, like, we're all on it.
Right.
And no one's really, like, our friends aren't really talking about it, but, like, then we find somebody on there and we're like, haha, got you.
Yeah.
So, if you're on there, you're going to be seen.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You're making your bed if you are in a relationship and you go on there.
Right. Go on Ashley Madison instead.
Right. Exactly.
I can't believe it. I started listening to Howard Stern again, and he's got the Ashley Madison commercials, which is a website that actually encourages, not just makes it possible to cheat.
Yeah.
And so they're like... So they have a song of this woman singing, I want someone who's not my guy. And I'm going, wow, you know, I mean, they've really gone far with this website.
It's so crazy. I mean, that's what's wrong with the world.
But I guess there's a market for it.
Yeah.
You know, people are always going to cheat.
I guess.
Yeah. It's funny, I'm still watching The Wolf of Wall Street.
Still?
Yeah, because I told you, I watch movies in parts, like 30-minute spurts. So every day I'll watch another 30 minutes of it. But I mean, the decadence that these guys were involved in.
Yeah.
Know? I mean, everything that they did, you know, like a million-dollar party. And, you know, I mean, and they knew they were doing something wrong. They
right.
just kept on doing it.
A lot of people do that, and then they do it till they, like, because they're getting away with it.
Right.
They forget that they could get caught, or they right. think they're invincible, but...
That's the thing. I think when you have a lot of money, you feel invincible, you know, because it gives you such freedom to do anything you want.
It's true.
You know?
They say money is power.
It really is, you know, and I'm thinking, I really need some money.
Tell me about it.
You know? But I've realized in my life that, you know, I mean, in many cases, parents don't really teach their kids how to manage money, how to handle money. I mean, you know, there's people that actually analyze your relationship to money because it's such an important thing.
Yeah.
So nobody ever taught me, and I finally realized I don't know how to manage my friggin' money. So I better, because... When you don't know how to manage your money, it doesn't matter how much you make, you're always going to be out of money.
Right.
Because you just have, you know, because that's your attitude. It's like, if I have more money, I'll buy some more. But that's not the way it works.
No, you obviously need to have money in your bank account.
Right.
At all times.
So it's harder to keep your money than to make it.
Yes.
You know, and so I realized that first I should probably still, while my kids are in their early 20s, maybe still talk to them, except I'm not qualified to. So I decided I'm going to do some reading up on this and really try to change my attitude towards money. Maybe I'll get more.
That it sounds like great. Yeah. You manifest it. And then also, I think it is smart to teach your kids. I would like to teach my kids from like birth. Like they could do a chore, they get a quarter. You know, like you.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And like how to like start a savings account. Like, yes, you may have $4, but at least you save $4.
Right.
And then it continues to grow. And then like you take a percentage of everything you make and then you put it in your checking and then you move the rest to your savings. And like, but I think also when you think about a savings account, it's not just to save it. Because then you're like, what am I saving it for? I'm living right now.
Right.
But if you think about it, well, okay, further down the line, there are the things I might need. Like, I know if I rent out my apartment, let's say, for a week, I know I can put that toward a facial. I could put it toward bills I have to pay. I could put it toward a vacation. I could put it toward, like, paying off a credit card so I don't have to pay that monthly. So to me, it equals solutions.
Right.
Versus just, like, money in the... just sitting there. I don't know.
And it's a state of mind also. You know, I talked to a...
It's comforting.
Yeah.
It's
security. It really is. We'll get back to talking about money. We have our guest here who we totally forgot to mention is calling. So let's go ahead and take that. Good morning. You're on the air. Is this Nancy?
Hi. Hi. Good morning. This is Nancy Soleri.
Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Good. Thank you very much. Are you calling us from L.A. today?
I am. It's beautiful here.
Beautiful, huh? I know. Mm-hmm. I know. Have you lived here a long time?
I have, actually. I've lived here about 20 years, and then before that, I was in Oregon.
Oh, in Oregon. I see.
Yeah.
So what made you move here?
Well, actually, I first went to New York and worked out there, and then I came to came here and did a little work on shows called like Entertainment Tonight and some other shows, and then actually went into real estate, did a bunch of different things, but I always knew that Southern California was my home.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So you always felt you belong here.
Always, yes.
Wow. So tell us what it is that you do, Nancy.
Well, I do a lot of different things. I am a motivational speaker and a life coach, but I also have a radio show as well called Living Full Out, and we actually just launched a TV talk show called Living Full Out as well on March 1st.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Congrats.
Sounds great. So what, so what is the show
really
about?
Really quite busy.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. So tell us what Living Full Out is about, the radio show.
Well, really, Living Full Out, the radio show and the TV show are an extension of the company. So the company itself, it's really about helping people to stay motivated in their life, to really live their lives full out. And that whole premise has come from, you know, my personal journey as well as so many that I've met over the years. And I just mentioned my journey because I'm actually legally blind. So, you know, when life gives us those curveballs, we have to be able to take them and run with it, kind of thing.
Absolutely. Have you always been blind?
No, I was actually diagnosed at 16, but it saw pretty well with contacts at 16. But in my 20s and 30s, it took a really large jump. And so today I suffer from color blindness, night blindness, depth perception loss, so there's no stairs or curbs in my world, and everything for the most part is just pretty much blurry.
Yeah, wow, I can't imagine that. You know, sometimes I take off my glasses, everything is so blurry, and I realize I'm disconnected from what's around me, you know, because I can't focus on anything sharply. Right?
Absolutely. And then you have to rely on those other senses, your smell, your taste, your touch.
Wow. So, I mean, this was gradual for you. It's not something that happened overnight.
No, it was gradual. And I think in a lot of respects, that was a great thing because I've met people over the years who have went blind suddenly. But gradual is also kind of a mind game. Because you consistently make adjustments in your life and you master things and you figure something out, and then your vision or your condition, whatever it may be, will get worse, and then you have to make more adjustments. And sometimes with people who have any kind of a disability at all, as your condition gets worse, not only do you have to make adjustments, but there's financial costs involved. So I know people who over the years have had issues walking. They might have to buy canes and wheelchairs and lifts and, you know, a whole bunch of number of things. And then for me, everything in my world talks. So I have a talking computer, talking calculator, talking scale, you name it, I have it.
Wow. So mm-hmm. Now, did that bring you down at all? I mean, it must have, right? As strong as you are, I mean, to lose your sight and gradually you're feeling like, you know, like going downstream quickly and there's nothing I can do about it. It's like heading toward a fall.
Yeah, you know, I think you bring up a great question. And I think the biggest thing is, like for me, going legally blind, and there's still uncertainty. There's no cure in sight. And so, you know, really realistically, blindness is a possibility. And I think you just have to kind of go through the phases of grief, meaning that you're losing a piece of you. You have to give up driving, and that's a luxury and a kind of something we all feel and kind of take for granted sometimes, but you have to give up things. You have to get used to being in a room with other people, and sometimes you don't get the joke because it's a visual thing. Yes. I know my sister, who also has the same condition I have, she recently went to a concert, and she just came away crying because while everybody else was laughing at the dancing and all the things that were going on stage, she couldn't take a part of that. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, sometimes it does get emotionally sensitive because you do feel left out of some of life's experiences.
Yeah, that's terrible. You know, I mean, I can't imagine how lonely it must feel sometimes.
It can feel lonely, definitely, but you know, to counteract the loneliness, it also allows you to connect with people, I think, in a very intimate, genuine way. So for me, because I've had to ask for help over the years, you know, whether it be a drive here or can you read that on the internet for me or read this piece of paper, it's allowed people to kind of be of service to me. And whenever somebody is of service to somebody else or can help somebody else, really both people win. And so I've been able to develop really strong, intimate relationships with people because I have to be vulnerable. I have to be open. And when I'm open, they're open. So it's kind of interesting because I think if I had full sight and if I was out there doing everything myself and like so many of us do, I don't know that I would have those same connections.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you found the positive in this, and that's a great, admirable thing, I think, you know. So I understand you do public speaking as well, right? What do you cover there in your speeches, in your probably, is it like workshops and stuff that you have?
Well, I do workshops. I mostly get booked for keynote speeches. A lot of times I'm the person they have at the very beginning of the event or in the middle. But a lot of times I get brought on by various national associations, and sometimes I might talk on stress management. I'll talk about leadership, building a community, finding your purpose. And every industry I talk to is different. It might be pharmacists one week, human resource professionals another week, or even various nonprofits. But my work before any engagement I do is to really understand the stresses, the demands, the ins and outs of the people attending. And then we all have this common thread. So whether it's a personal development or professional development, it's finding that common thread so that I can relate to them. And so if it's a professional organization I'm talking to, I might relate to them from my own professional experiences. And if it's a more of a let's say a nonprofit or a clinic or something like that, I might go more personal, but just trying to find that connection.
Yeah. Sounds good. We're talking to Nancy Soleri, and we're talking about her motivational. Now, so the radio show, is that pretty much the same thing? I mean, do you guys, like, help people out? How is the show structured?
Yeah, so again, we have the radio show and the talk show, and they are different. So the radio show is more of an opportunity for people to call in and get life coaching. You know, we try to pack in as many as we can. We usually have, you know, maybe 2 to 4 callers in each segment. We have 4 segments to the show, and they're usually all themed. We might have a stress management show. We might have how to be a good negotiator, how not to be scammed, you know, and people can call in with all the frustrations that come with those topics. And so people are very vulnerable. It's national, so people call in from all over the country. We also, on the TV side, that is not as themed. It's more of a variety show. But with that, we will bring on experts that will talk and give kind of valuable insights or tools for people to stay motivated. We'll have motivational guests, people who have overcome challenges in their life. Like on our March 1st show, we had a gal named Jessica Cox. She's the first armless pilot. I mean, literally, she flies planes with no arms. She wow. drives with no arms. She's wow. really amazing. In that show, we'll have celebrity guests that will talk about their personal attachments to nonprofits that they give their time to. And then in the talk show, we also do live life coaching. We call it the coaching corner. And then we do over-the-phone coaching as well.
Right. Now, so if someone asks what qualifies you as a life coach, did you have to study anything? Did you have to be licensed? How does it work?
Absolutely. Well, I have a previous background in psychology from all my undergrad work at University of Oregon when I was there. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, I am certified as a life coach. And really, life coaching to me, you learn the training, you learn the questions to ask, you learn a lot of good tools to help people come in and out of, again, different phases of grief or anxiety or stress. However, I do believe that a lot of times the best life coaches, the best doctors, the best attorneys, you know, you name it, on and on and on, whatever profession we're in, it all comes down to personality and how we connect to each other. So being disabled and being legally blind, I'm able to relate to people, I feel, in a way that is very relatable. So whether somebody is blind like I am, or they feel like they're lost because they have no job that they feel proud of or defines them, or maybe they've had a lot of heartbreak and they've come out of divorce, whatever that pain is, it's that pain, again, that I try to connect with so they don't feel so alone. And when they don't feel alone, that's when they can open up and really have breakthroughs.
Wow. Very interesting stuff, you know. I mean, I congratulate you for all the things that you're doing. I see that you're even a best-selling author. Do you have a book that people can find?
Yeah, so a couple different books. You can actually find them on my website, livingfullout.com. So we have one called The Speaker's Advocate. So for anybody that wants to become a speaker, find their voice, maybe become a better presenter, that's a perfect book for them. We have another one called Unleash the Powerhouse Within You, and that is about, that's really for more of the business-minded entrepreneurial type, you know, which type of entrepreneur there are, how to navigate the pitfalls and so forth. Then we have one called Visualize Your Potential Now. I wrote that specifically for the visually impaired community to help them navigate losing their vision, again, finding their purpose, asking for help, all the things that they would need to go through in the various phases of losing their eyesight. And then I was a part of another collaboration of a book called How Did They Do That? And that's a wonderful book where it's about 20 different stories of different speakers and authors and what they overcame.
Wow. Very cool. So everybody can find out more about Nancy on the website livingfullout.com. And find out everything about the books and the website. I see you also do things for companies and corporations as well as with individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we'll do corporate coaching as well. And again, just like a family unit at home. You know, a company is their own unit, and there's different personalities. Everybody's trying to achieve a common goal, an individual goal. So we do a lot of the corporate coaching as well.
Very cool. All right, everybody, check out Nancy Solari. Nancy, thank you so much for the call this morning. You're a very inspirational person, I think, for a lot of people. You're the voice for blind people, and I think that's very noble. And obviously, it helps you in your career as well to give back.
You know, it really does, and I appreciate you so much for having me on the show today, and I hope everybody lives their life full out and, you know, just enjoy this grand journey that we're on.
Awesome. All right, Nancy, well, much more success to you, and congratulations on everything. You have a lot going on, and that's cool. When can we expect the TV show to come on?
Oh, actually, the TV show is on now. So if people go to Living Full Out YouTube channel, they can always see the streaming of the show. It's live every Sunday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. And so this Sunday, we have a very powerful lineup, so definitely check it out.
Sounds good. So on YouTube, and I would imagine there are links on your website to that as well.
Absolutely. Okay. You got it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Nancy Solari, thank you so much, and all the best to you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, you know, I mean, did you ever think about, like, what blind people must go through?
I have not, but I think that it would probably be scary at first.
Very scary, huh?
But then you adjust, just like you adjust to everything.
Right. And then there's the people that never see. They're born like that.
Right.
I mean, you know, my heart goes out to them.
But they don't even know what they're missing.
What they're missing. That's true.
I do have a fear of getting, like, LASIK and then not being able to see again.
I know. That's
but I really I want LASIK.
I know. So, I mean, for many years I thought, you know, it's kind of new. I'm going to wait long term and see if there's any damage to people that have had it done. And for the most part, look, people still do it, you know. And I think if you go to a good doctor, a good place that does it, then it's probably worth it.
Yeah.
You know, I know I'm afraid too, you know. I mean, I'm really afraid to mess around with my eyes, period. But I know I've had enough of these glasses, you know.
I've had enough of contact lenses.
Yeah.
And I also don't like things on my face, so
yeah.
I don't really want to wear glasses either.
I know. They're a pain in the butt, I'm telling you.
But I need to see, so.
Yeah. I know. Do you see blurry too when you take off your contacts?
Yes. Yeah. I am nearsighted.
Right.
That means I can't see far, right?
You can't see far.
Right.
Right. And I'm the same way, you know, and it's like you take off your glasses and you can't read anything and you can't, and it's just a feeling. Sometimes if I'm outside without my glasses or I take them off for a moment, I feel like I'm totally disconnected from the world. You know, it's like almost like I can't see, so I don't even bother looking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
For me, it's not there yet, but yeah. It's blurry, and I feel like my eyes are straining, so they're tired.
Right.
And they're not, like, open wide enough as they normally are.
Yeah.
It like, kind of hurts to not be able to see because I feel like my eyes are working overload.
Yeah. Yeah. See, like, if I look outside, I can see, like, the buildings, the trees and everything, but not a lot of detail. Like, you know, I mean, I can, you know, maybe tell what kind of car I'm seeing or something. But yeah, as far as people, faces, you know, 50 feet away from you, I can't see the face.
Yeah. No, you know? I mean, even with contacts, it's sometimes hard for me to see distance. But I use that as an excuse when I'm, like, somewhere and somebody sees me, but I don't see them. I'm like, I might have seen them, but I pretend I didn't. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm sorry. My eyes aren't good.
Yeah.
Didn't see you over there.
I know. But I've often thought about it, and I think most people would say if they had to lose one sense, or if there's one that they don't want to lose, it's sight, you know, because we rely so much on the sight. But then again, you know, she said that you heighten all your other senses when you can't see.
I think sight probably for me would be the hardest because then you can't really get around without somebody else.
Right.
If you can't hear, you can still see.
Right.
And you can read. If you can't smell, you know, you won't be able to taste then, but you can still see and hear.
Right, exactly. You can still live okay.
Right.
Right? And touch as well.
Well, but then again, sight, people that, you know, might have lost their sight think they are living okay. I mean, right. What she's doing is amazing.
She's very inspiring.
She's doing more than people with sight can do.
Yeah.
So that's true. We were talking about like work ethic and like people and their ambition and drive and stuff. Like,
right.
She's doing way more than other people.
That's true. It would be so easy to just say, oh, I'm blind. I'm not going to do anything.
Well, also because you're called disabled. So that right. immediately gives you a handicap and you can, you know, rely on that and that become like your scapegoat for everything.
Yeah.
And she doesn't.
She doesn't. She refuses to be a victim.
Right. And I love that because I cannot handle victims.
I know. And that's why, you know, but sometimes, you know, people do get depressed. But if you're clinically depressed, you should definitely seek help, you know.
Right.
And there is help out there. There's no such thing as being depressed without maybe not a cure, but treatment.
Definitely.
You know, and you don't have to live like that. And
no, and I believe in medicine. Whatever you got to do to be happy.
Yeah.
That's why they made it. You know, like the way I see it with like depression and things like that, or like, you know, let's say people that are bipolar or whatever. If you have an iron deficiency, you take an iron vitamin.
Right.
If you, you know, are vitamin C deficient, you take vitamin C. Whatever it is, there's, you know, some way to counteract it or at least like benefit your immune system or your system in general. So why not do that the same thing with depression or any other thing that is also chemically involved in your body?
Right. And I'm a living proof of it. You know, I have bipolar disorder and I was diagnosed with it in my 30s because, you know, I couldn't figure out why I wasn't able to function, why I was like impatient, why I was getting angry with everything and stuff and depressed. I mean, it's all, when you have bipolar, it's all there at the same time. You're depressed and you're like manic at the same time. You know, so it's crazy. But so for many years, I mean, I think it was even responsible for breaking up my family. And, you know, because, I mean, look, when someone's bipolar and they're not treated, they can be awful to live with.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm the first one to say that. You know, I was unhappy. I was making everybody around me unhappy, which makes you even more unhappy. So then you start thinking about suicide and everything. And before you know it, it spirals out of control.
Right.
So all I'm saying is when people have any mental issue at all, go seek out help because there's treatment for everything. And in fact, even more than for physical ailments, you know.
Yeah.
We have We have cancer and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease and everything that we haven't found a cure for.
Right.
And yet for mental illness, there's a lot of things you can do. So it's pretty advanced, you know, and just haven't been there, I can tell you. You know, and I mean, I've been on medication now. It's like a cocktail of three different meds. And I've been able to live a normal life for many years.
Yeah.
In fact, I forget what it was like to be depressed or angry or anything. I know. So, but they do have side effects, you know, and sometimes you have to take that into account and ask yourself, am I willing to live with that?
Yeah.
Is it worth it?
Well, I think, you weigh the pros and cons of the situation. And
right. But the tricky thing here is what happens to a lot of people is after they've been on meds for a while, they realize, hey, I'm feeling great. You know, maybe I don't need it anymore.
Right.
And they're forgetting that they're feeling great because of the medication.
Right.
And that's and what I did a few months ago.
You're not cured from the medication. It's like it cures symptoms.
Yeah, it's treating you.
Right.
You know, but it's not a cure because if you start taking the meds, it's going to come right back.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I thought, you know, I can't take some of the side effects. Let me try and switch this. I went to another psychiatrist. She said, yeah, go ahead and try this. And you know what? 2-3 days without meds, I plunged into depression, couldn't function, couldn't do anything. And I'm just talking a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all I'm saying is if you're on meds and they work, stay on them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think that, you know, people have like a stigma about mental health.
They do.
And it's like anything else. Your brain is an organ, just like, you know, your heart. If there was something wrong with your heart or your lungs or your liver or your kidneys, you would seek treatment.
Right.
So why not for your brain, the one thing that literally controls everything in your body,
right,
and your daily activities and your interaction with other people, which we all want to interact with other people and connect.
Yeah.
So the one thing I think that they're like, you know, that people might skimp on is their brain.
Right. And that's the thing. That's why now they have like the parity law, at least in California, I know about it. And that is that health providers, insurance companies are required to give you mental health help just like they would physical help.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
Why is it called the parity law?
I think because they're saying we're going to pair this up with regular medicine and say that everybody has the same rights.
Oh, like pair. Like,
yeah, P-A-R-I-T-Y.
Oh, parity. Okay, because it sounded
not parody.
Like... Right, I was like, why is this a comedy law?
No, I'm sorry. Okay, it's my accent.
No, it's okay. I mean, I should also research it. But I was like, that's mean to also then add law. That layer of, like, comedy to people's mental health. Like, we're going to make a parody of other laws by giving you a law.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. Good to know that that's not the case.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
I know. Sometimes these things happen. Do you have like some songs where you thought the words were different than what they were?
All the time. In fact, really? Lauren always corrects me.
Uh-huh.
Because I'll just say, I'll make up words. I don't care. I also don't have time to like research the lyrics.
Right.
Back in my like younger days in like high school and middle school, I would be the girl that always knew the lyrics.
Right.
But now I'm like, I don't care. My lyrics sound just as good. And that person's not saying much anyway.
Right.
So I'll make it up. But like the Taylor Swift song, I forget which one it is, but everyone thinks it's like, I've got, it's like something about Starbucks lovers.
Uh-huh.
It's not. It's a long list of ex-lovers.
Oh, okay.
But people thought it was like, I've got Starbucks lovers. And it's like, why would you meet a guy at Starbucks and date him and all of his friends? Like, so yeah, I it's less of an accent thing and it's more of like a, these people mumble when they sing.
It's just how it sounds,
Right.
Like the song Panama by Van Halen, a lot of people thought it was Animal. So that was funny for a while. People are like, do you know the song Animal? I'm like, no, but I know Panama.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of songs like this. There was one time, I think there was a story on that we covered here on the show of songs that people think are different lyrics
mm-hmm.
than what they are.
Well, and then there are the songs that the lyrics just don't make sense anyway. So it's like the Maroon 5 song Animals.
Yeah.
They repeat syllables. It's not even words they're using anymore.
Right, right.
Animals, moles.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I know. It's like I didn't know what it meant in the beginning. I thought it meant some like a word or something, you know, like part of a word. But yeah, when I saw the lyrics, it's like it says animals, moles.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Why is that a choice?
I don't know.
Did we run out of words in the English language? Or did somebody forget to finish that song?
Yeah.
And they were like, well, I guess we'll just add sounds.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know. But you got to admit, Adam Levine's got some great songs, huh?
I love Maroon 5.
I don't even
care what they're singing about. I mean, I'll make fun of most things, but like at the end of the day, I'm still singing their songs.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I love the song Sugar. Lauren hates it.
Sugar? Is that the new one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the new one. I know. I listened to it. It didn't grab me as much as...
I think it grows on you.
Yeah.
The lyrics are not especially compelling.
Right.
It's kind of cheesy. It might as well be a Katy Perry song.
Right.
But I think it's cute and it's upbeat and it's fun. And I really like music like that because it's happy.
So. Yeah.
Like one of the lines is like a California summer's day or something like that. It's like, cool.
Yeah.
It's really, really awesome.
I know. But they've got... Some of the songs are X-rated, you know. I mean, they use the F word and things like that, you know, which is...
I didn't even know that. Is that their new stuff?
Yeah, Payphone. No. The
song Payphone. Oh, yeah. Well, the rap part.
Yeah, one more fucking love song and I'm, you know...
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be done or whatever it says. But, yeah, and the rap part as well, yeah. But, no, I mean, in the chorus, he keeps saying, you know, the fucking love song. So
interesting. Yeah, well, they don't play it on the radio, obviously.
No, they.
So.
Yeah, they.
I had no idea.
Yeah, they bleep that.
Yeah,
but when you have it, when you listen on Spotify or if you download the song,
yeah,
I know. There's a couple songs where they do that. It's really irritating me. There's a George Michael song called "Star People," and he also says "I don't give a fuck," and they bleep that too. So
well, I guess if they play it on the radio, they have to.
Yeah, I mean the song's supposed to be, you know. But it was funny that we were talking about that CeeLo Green song.
Yeah.
And they play that. So they bleep out the words on every line pretty much.
Yeah. Because the song is called F You.
Right.
Right. Which is kind of funny. I mean, I think that song's like all in good fun. And it's like,
yeah,
it's just funny. It's like a funny anthem about like, well, screw you.
Right.
Like, whatever.
Yeah. No, I know. There's, in fact, I don't know if I can find the song, but it doesn't really matter. But there's a song by Nielsen who, you know, he used to be a big singer. And there was sort of an obscure song of his. And they played it on Howard Stern. And he goes, you're breaking my heart. You tear it apart, so fuck you. Type of a thing.
Yeah.
And it's pretty funny. I don't know.
I think it's interesting that, like, bad words are, like, still so provocative. Like,
right.
We can't say it on the radio. And, okay, I get it. Like, kids could be in the car with you and they have to censor in some way. Or, like, on TV now they're, like, you know, saying more provocative type things at certain times of the night. Like, a show that airs at 10 could have, like, a dirty word in it versus, like, a show that's, like, primetime.
Really? I've never heard a dirty word on TV.
Yeah. Oh, they say the P word all the time.
Really?
Oh, I hear things and I'm like, what? Really? Okay. I guess the time.
P word like penis?
No. The other word.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm, like, kind of shocked by it, but then I'm like, wait. Times are changing.
Yeah.
And the whole world is changing in all ways, shape, and form. So, like,
right.
When are bad words not going to be bad words? They're just going to be words.
Right. Well, we always give meaning to words, you know. That's why you have all these controversies with people that are politically correct and how we should say things and so forth.
Well, we're not in Shakespearean times anymore. And
yeah.
I think the bad words are like a way to express yourself.
Right.
And we all say them at this point.
Yeah, I like it. I think they're funny. I think sometimes it makes what you say funny when you use the F word.
I think so, too. I do think, though, that sometimes when people use it and they use it with, like, force and anger,
right.
It's, like, abrasive.
Right.
And it, like, feels like a dart, like, being thrown at your chest, right. Or at least mine. I'm like, ugh, stop. It's hurting. Like, less of the anger.
Yeah.
But sometimes you got to use it to describe whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know.
I'm not mad at it.
Yeah.
I've never been like, ah, what profanity.
Yeah. No, I know. I've been a fan. I've been a fan of dirty words.
See, there's a word. The fan is in profanity.
That's true.
It is true.
Yeah.
Well.
So, you heard about the plane that crashed.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
You probably thought that was the first thing I was going to bring up, right?
I did, actually. And then I forgot about it.
Yeah,
and then,
I forgot about
now
it,
Now I'm
too.
Like, wait, we're back to where you want
yeah,
to be.
But the plane is obliterated. There's yes. nothing left.
And yeah. it's a pretty common plane. Like, the aircraft itself is one that, like, we fly all the time.
Yeah.
The size of the plane.
Wow. Airbus 320.
Yeah.
Carrying 150, and they all died.
Kids, like, babies, everybody. Yeah.
That was a flight from southern France to Germany, I think, or they said Spain. I don't know. They just changed the... Well, it was in the Alps.
Yeah.
So go figure where you're going to find them. They're saying it's very hard to get to it.
Yeah. And I guess they were like, it was during a time where it's usually the safest. It was like when it was cruising, like when it gets to that altitude and then it just cruises.
Right.
It only cruised for a minute and then it started plummeting for 8 minutes and then it was gone.
Wow.
Yeah. And I guess
you imagine for 8 minutes you're thinking about your death? I mean, is that the most terrifying thing ever?
The worst thing that could ever happen.
Yeah.
And the pilots didn't call for Mayday or anything.
Yeah.
And they're wondering why.
Yeah. A lot of mystery in those airplanes. I don't know what's going on.
Well, listen, if I was in charge of a plane and it was going down, I don't know what I would do either.
Yeah.
I mean, they train you for that, but then do they really train you for that?
I think you're just in shock, pretty much.
Probably.
I don't know. You know, either scream or you're just quiet and you don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's scary.
You're realizing it's the end. Wow.
I don't know.
I know. I don't want to think about it. All right. Well, that's it for today, folks. Tomorrow we have another studio guest. Yesterday's guest, you know, was pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, the writer.
Totally.
And,
very interesting.
Lisa Doctor. You guys should check out the show if you're into writing or reading or anything like that. And it was cool that she'd work with Sylvester Stallone and Robin Williams.
Totally.
And we learned a couple things about them, too. So thank you for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.